I'm George Tsoukalas. I'm an engineer with Greek Research and Technology Network, or GRNET for short. It's a government-controlled institution that interconnects all of academic institutions in Greece. We've developed and deployed Zeus, an internet based voting system based on Helios. A bit about this presentation. First, I'm going to give you some background, which is useful if you want to understand the context and some of our choices. Then I'm going to a very brief introduction of the Helios workflow. And then I'm going into more detail about our modifications to the Helios workflow and the Helios software. We had algorithmic and usability requirements we had to meet. And then I'm going to talk about actually running the elections, our setup, the incidents we had, because there were many, and some of the issues we had to face organizing elections and running them. I'm going to end with some conclusions of our own and some future plans. So, the Greek academia is under reform. A lot of Greece is. And last year, there was a tight deadline, a new law, according to which universities had to elect new governing councils by the end of the year or before the spring. The thing is, there was the reforms were very controversial. Some factions did not want the reforms to take place, and they were actually very activist about it. And ending summer last year, traditional elections, with a traditional ballot box, were being physically shut down by protesters, either by occupying the room, or even in several instances, lifting up the ballot box and taking it away. So there was a lot of controversy, and mid-September, a bill was issued that gave the option to all universities to run the elections over the internet if they wanted to. And our institution, GRNET, would be the one to technically support it. Almost everybody used our system, but not everybody. Some elections were carried out in the traditional way. But all the biggest institutions, where most of the controversy was, actually used Zeus, and all elections were ultimately successful with good turnout, 80% on average. So, we extended Helios. Helios is a verifiable all-digital voting system. There's no paper trail. And there are actually two versions in the literature. The original one used Mixnet to anonymize the votes. But then the third version of the software, Helios 3, switched to homomorphic tallying, which was the only software we had access to. It's open source. A key feature of this system is that voters can repeatedly revise their vote in order to counter coercion. I'm going to present the Helios workflow stages in brief. First, the election officials create the election by registering voters, candidates, assigning trustees to the election, and setting up other options like the time of the election or specific options for the election type, like a minimum number of choices or maximum number of choices. Then the trustees generate their own secret keys, and they are all then combined into an election key, which is used to encrypt every vote. When the trustees are ready, they send out invitations to voters via email, and the voters use this invitation to actually access the electronic voting booth, and then the voting starts and ends, and after that the votes have to be mixed and anonymized, and then they have to be decrypted. Decryption is a distributed process. Every trustee, including the server, contributes their own partial decryption, and all those partial decryption factors are then combined to reveal the final unencrypted ballots. All these steps are accompanied by appropriate proofs, and they are linked together so that at the end, there's a transcript leading to the results, which one can mathematically verify that it indeed followed the protocol. So this is just a list of our cryptographic primitives. It's they're very standard. The only thing I'm going to note is that we used a 2 kilobit crypto system with 2 kilobit plaintext, and the security parameter for mixing was fairly decent at 128 rounds. So we had to modify several things, both in the workflow, the Helios workflow, and the Helios software. And I'm going to iterate over them. So we needed a specific election type to run, STV, single transferable vote. I will say more details about it later. And we had to support party list elections with multiple party lists to choose from. For usability reasons, we altered the invitation format. An important thing about the voting is that we had no public balloting board where all votes were posted. Instead, we distributed signed vote submission receipts to compensate for that. We implemented a parallel version of the mixnet, the Sacco-Killian mixnet, and we also parallelized decryption within the browser and from our command line tool. We also did some extensive engineering work rewriting Helios, about 50% of the code, I think. And we had a dedicated software module that handled a structured proof document. Now, single transferable vote. This forced us away from the homomorphic tallying, because we needed to have access to whole ballots unencrypted, because this voting system under specific algorithms, it can move a vote around to different candidates if it it needs to. Fortunately, there was a pre-existing counting system that was to be used, and we only had to produce the decrypted ballots and forward them for counting. So we could not do that with Helios 3, so we implemented MixNet, and we modified all the proofs and the ballot structure required for that. We had plenty of modifications to the software and the workflow due to usability constraints. We were not the ones dictating what was usable or not. We just demoed the system, and there were objections. Well, the first objection was that in Helios, after you select your ballot, and after it gets uploaded to the server, you are forced to choose between an audit vote that would test your local browser or a normal vote that would be counted. So this forced choice was deemed too confusing and dangerous for the voters. And well, they were worried that voters would unwillingly publish their true ballot by misusing the browser or not understanding the choice very well. So we removed it from there, but we replaced it with a much more obscure version so that actually people were discouraged to use it. And we succeeded in that. Well, more about it later. So we had an original plan for a two-factor authentication using mobile phones, but we had no time for it, and there was no available registry of phones, phone numbers, that we could legally use for this system. But we exploited this these codes to use them with the audit system. So another objection was that in the invitation, there is a link to the website of the service. And if the users had to provide credentials to log in, it was thought that it was cumbersome and confusing, and that voters might try their familiar credentials, those accessing their normal email accounts, instead of the special purpose credentials issued for the elections. So we embedded those credentials within the link, and voters had only to click on it, and they were transferred to the voting booth. Well, this has some security implications, but they were not very serious. So other concerns raised during development and early testing was that although proofs are supposed to be public, we didn't make them so automatically. Instead, we gave access to the trustees, and they would decide what to do with them. And the most important reason was that Quercus would not be able to have anonymous access to election data. So they had to petition the committee for access to data. And another thing, a detail that was proven very important, is that there is a feature that somebody requested that voters can be disqualified during voting, even after they have voted, and their votes were to be canceled. The reasons to disqualify a voter is an error in the registry discovered after the election starts, or a voter misbehavior trying to discredit the system, or any other valid reasons the trustees might find. Of course, this is carefully logged within the proofs document so that it can be taken account into when verifying the election.
Is that true for traditional green voting? That voters
No, and actually in a traditional system you can't do that, because when the envelope drops, there's no track back to it. They were afraid that somebody would try to undermine the credibility of the elections and the election system by publishing their credentials, and they did. And we had this feature implemented, and it saved us, because there was a great deal of, rhetoric publicly, opponents of the reforms and therefore the voting system, and proponents of the reforms and the voting system. I will talk about this later. So the obscure method of auditing in ZEUS, basically the server and the voters share some secret codes, and the browser must not have them. And the voter optionally attaches a code to a submitted ballot. And if the code is among the shared, then it's considered a real vote. Otherwise, it's considered an audit request. So the vote was encrypted with is requested from the browser and the voter, so as to reveal the encryption and check nobody cheated. The thing is that we designed this so that if we made that code attachment mandatory, this procedure would have a dual use, both providing a second authentication factor and a means to audit the voting booth. It's a detail about encoding. The STV election type requires the ballot is a ranked list of choices, and we did encode that by enumerating all possible candidate elections and giving a smaller ordinals to ballots with fewer candidates, so as to save some bit space. A zero is a blank vote, no candidates selected. And if the ballot is decrypted to a number greater than the maximum possible selections, then it is considered a spoiled vote. Of course, our system would never produce such a spoiled vote, but we could not stop anyone using their own software to submit such a vote. We were ready to do a full investigation if such a spoiled vote was decrypted, but none were. We also use this encoding to support multiple party elections on top of it, because we didn't want to develop and test another encoding. So a party list is embedded along with other party lists within the same big candidate list in a standard format. There are some entries containing parameters for validation at counting time, like minimum and maximum selections per party, or whether I can choose from one party or many of them. And each election type had its own specialized creation form and voting booth. So we didn't have a bulletin board, so we compensated with handing out vote submission receipts downloaded by the voter or and sent to their email. And these were signed by the server. And they contain quite a bit of information, full plaintext and identification, the election key, the candidate list, because it's required in order to interpret the encoded number at the end. This is to be attached in voter complaints against the election. Or with forensics, if something happened, we had we would ask for voters to submit to fetch their receipts in order to have an investigation. It's important to note that we did not identify the voter, so that receipts were publishable. There was no name, IP, or time of voting. And now, about actually running the elections. Well, of course, trustees were ultimately responsible for running them. They handled communication with voters and organizing them. But we had to support both trustees and voters with usability. We had a very strong help desk team. And we even had help desk members on site in many elections, first ones especially. The engineering team actually did a lot of support with the incident handling. We did investigations. Some voters had questions about specific events. We investigated. We helped them compile reports and produce accurate public statements. Trustees actually negotiated with us many details about reporting ongoing and after the results. They asked for specialized reports or requested features like the one about the exclusion of a voter. And this is a reference of the most important election-threatening incidents. Well, first, we had some denial-of-service attacks, network-based, in two cases. Nothing very serious. They were not very big. We handled them. But then we had incidents like someone hacking into university servers and sending fake invitations that were very believable. And actually, voters believed those fake invitations. And their system was somewhat flawed. It delivered many copies of the same invitation, and this really got voters very irritated. But everything was sorted out. A new server, every voter was informed exactly what happened. And there was a separate infrastructure set up, and elections were repeated and completed successfully. In another incident, well, this was not an attack, but due to a software glitch, some voters were able to vote before the designated election start time. And although technically it was not a problem, we could ask them to vote again within time limits, or we could just eliminate their votes. But because the trustee committee wanted to adhere to the traditional intuitions about elections, they decided to not risk it and cancel and repeat the elections. Another incident was a social engineering attempt at identity theft. Someone contacted the trustees and said their email in the list was wrong and that a new mail had to be used. And the committee complied. Of course, the new email was not legitimate. And we learned about that because the legitimate voter contacted us with a complaint. He could not cast a vote. We did an investigation. And fortunately, this was resolved before election started. The attackers wanted to exploit this incident in order to discredit the elections. But fortunately, this was handled early. Another instance was exactly the one I was talking about. Someone posted their credentials on Facebook and called their followers to just cast votes. In the spirit of that that the election system was not credible and it was very easily undermined. Of course, we used this feature and we excluded the voter and all 18 votes that had been casted. And this was well accepted. The most serious threats to the elections were two instances of occupation within university infrastructure. Server rooms were occupied and mail servers were either shut down or cut off the network. In particular, in one of the cases, this occupation lasted for 4 days, during which the election was running. We gave extensions. And to resolve this situation, we had prepared a system using not emails, but mobile phones to transfer the voting credentials. But we didn't have to use it because taking down the network affected a lot more than the elections. Some hospitals had infrastructure running on it. So there was a lot of pressure and the occupation ended and the election completed successfully. Beside attacks, we had issues with voters. Well, the most prominent one, for us at least, was that they tend to reply to the email sending them the credentials and with a full quote of the secrets. Of course, this was not a real problem since we had already access to their credentials, but it's a very important risk factor. Many of them wanted to see, understandably, the submission receipt, but we were instructed to make it difficult to review it, although it is a plain text file. Some webmail applications were distorting the voting link. They used some exit gateway that was redirecting to the actual link, and this caused them not to be able to vote. And the biggest problem was browser compatibility. We made a very hard decision to drop Internet Explorer support, but this didn't turn out to be such a big problem after all. But of course, our good help desk, I think, helped a lot with this. Now, some issues with the trustees. Our biggest fear was that the USB device with the election keys would fail, and then the results could not be decrypted. Fortunately, we instructed them to have two copies in two separate such devices, and in one or two cases, we had actually to use the second one because the first one failed. Another thing was that trustees belonged to the same peer group and often trusted each other too much to the point of exchanging their keys for backup, which of course defeats the purpose of having more than one trustees. And another thing was that trustee committees had a technically savvy operator for handling the computer interactions, such as compiling the correct form of spreadsheet list of candidates, of voters, submitting it to the system, or complete actions like excluding voters or stopping elections. It was usually someone trusted from IT support, but still, we think it's a liability, it's a risk. There were many skeptics that wrote some articles about the dangers of using such a system. Of course, many of them were politically, obviously politically motivated, but among their arguments, there were some valid ones. And the one we took notice especially was that remote voting destroys a critical social character of election day, whereby a portion of the voters and the candidates actually counted on personal contact outside the ballot room in order to convince from the, well, the candidate would convince some undecided voters. We had a very detailed documentation of how it worked in layman terms, and this helped many people to keep quiet about it. But there were no objections on the real technical problem, which was that there was complete trust in the election service provider. Some of our observations about trust, it was very easier for people to trust the system if it looked like traditional elections. And some of them, or many of them, were not very comfortable with elections running for more than a day or during night hours, because the conventional wisdom says that something suspicious might happen when nobody's looking. There was, if there was an air of official in official presentation in reports and in calls and in announcements, this was reassuring, even if there was no substance beneath. And we were very relieved that most trustee committees were very eager to follow the due procedure and safeguard elections. Actually, many of them went to great lengths to ensure that nobody could disrupt the elections by entering and occupying a room. And we found that it was very conductive to trust that we had the flexibility to answer specialized report requests, and we could implement features upon requests. And another thing was that the trustees belonging to the same social environment with the remaining of the electorate had very valuable insights about behaviors of voters and candidates and the sentiments we had to address. Of course, there were big risks that were not addressed, although we had features in the software to address them. And the first one was that nobody actually audited their booth in an official elections. And indeed, we made that obscure. And another thing was that no committee of trustees chose to make an additional mix, even though they spent a lot of effort in organizing it. A reason was that they were not very technically competent to understand what they were doing. And even if they were experts, they didn't bother because they trusted us. So in this sense, the privacy was exclusively in our hands. Of course, we had every incentive to safeguard the privacy, but this is not something that can be scaled to future elections. Now, one very important realization was that trustees cannot really do expert work on guaranteeing safety or evaluating safety and security, and we could not ask this from them. And you need different experts. Of course, the election service provider is an expert, but he's the one running the elections, so there must be at least some other expert checking on them. So practically, this means mixing votes and verifying results. We thought that if the process could be somewhat standardized, and if we could do some good engineering with the software, the independent verifier's job would be easy. After setting up a server, there was no real need to have the overhead of running the elections and tackle with all the social problems. A server would be just doing a job, answering requests for mixing and verification. We're actually very interested in such independent verifier collaborations. We're new to the community. Maybe you have some feedback or ideas. And for the future, there's more elections that are scheduled, but we have to clean up the software a bit and start a proper development project. This was all very hasted. We have to implement faster mixing, which would make this standalone mixing and verification service much more practical. We need to optimize browser support and usage in general. But we're thinking about mobile devices as much better trusted clients, because you can control what is being run and with what permissions. It's far more secure than the standard PC-based web browser. Well, thank you. If you have any questions.
I'm curious, I mean, thanks for the presentation, cool work. I look forward to seeing the code. I'm curious about the balance of the size of your election compared to the number of incidents you had in incident response, and how that data tells us anything like this will ever scale.
Yeah, it's, well, of course, we couldn't scale with this kind of incident rate, but it's still practical for low volume elections. We had up until now some 60 elections with a total of about 12,000 votes. But we did a lot of service to the academic community, so maybe it could not scale as it is to larger electorates, but it can still be useful around. And we certainly get a lot of requests from people wanting to use our system for their closed community elections. So, well, nevertheless, we think that with proper engineering, we could scale this up. And maybe if we have some dedicated people responding to incidents, we could handle a much larger volume of them. Of course, if there are millions of voters, it's another completely another scale. But perhaps maybe several thousands is okay.
Say about the design of using an end-to-end cryptography if voters aren't
Yeah, well, the thing is that auditing can work even if only a subset of the votes are, well, this is a discussed issue. Well, and in our case, we could force them to use the system, the auditing process, by making these codes mandatory. So we could train them to just, you know, toss in some random numbers and see if the vote turns, the ballot turns right, and then use the right code to submit a real vote. I don't think this is very difficult. The voters could understand it, but I think that we were the only expert around. If someone else was going to run elections, we would be very eager to do some audits on them. So I don't think we have to rely upon the simple voter for auditing. We can do audits by experts.
Is there any way to, or did you track at all the costs, the investments you made to run such a system? If one were to imagine trying to scale this up or run this in a repeated manner, you know, per voter, or what are the fixed costs? What are the costs per voter that one could envision in these kinds of systems?
Yeah. Well, from a technical point of view, cryptography was very heavy, but we did have a lot of hardware in our data center, some data centers. There was a, we calculated that we needed some, we could run national elections on our system. Greece has about 10 million voters. With the infrastructure we already had available in our data center. I think the bottleneck is not technical. It's about organizing this all those centers. That you have to have experts performing proper audits at many places. You have to convince people to use the system. It's much more difficult from a social point of view, but we're planning, as I said, to implement a better mixnet, a faster mixnet. So this could probably take us up an order of magnitude of vote volume we can support with our own resources. Of course, if someone was going to dedicate serious resources on it, I don't think there would be a problem.
Yeah. I get the impression that your group was trusted by everybody. I heard you say that or something. No one knew. Why did they trust you?
Yes. Well, our group was actually very trusted because of our good record on helping the community. Our institution offers a great many services to the academia, and it's our staff is often drawn from the university communities and university faculty, and actually, there was a very strong political will to go on with these elections. So they had to trust us. And I cannot speak on behalf of the government, but I suspect that even if our system was much less secure, it would still be used. So it's a good thing we try to make it secure. Yeah? Well, yes, there are two kinds of attacks. There are attacks that compromise the integrity of the elections, and there are attacks that compromise the privacy of the elections. So it's fortunately, with cryptography, it's easy for an expert to verify that the election is OK from the server side point of view. Of course, clients are open to attack. Now, for the privacy concerns, it doesn't matter much, as I see it, if you don't have privacy guarantees, because if privacy is breached, then you learn about it. If you don't learn about it, then practically it was not breached. So these elections were in a closed environment, not very populous. So we would have detected if someone was using means to coerce votes or had access to actually what everyone voted. But then We had a defense, like they have to prove they know what everyone voted. And I think it's technically possible for someone to prove that. So we would ask for a proof. So everybody was more worried about the correctness of the elections than the privacy issues. They trusted us on the privacy.